Sorry.
So it's what?
We say we don't mind anything we say is just fine. They can put it on the tape.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll put got it.
Yeah.
All right. So we have a quorum and good afternoon. It's what, 4:02? And I'd like to call the, what date is this now? July 12th.
July 12th.
Finance Subcommittee to order. And so roll call. I'm Chris Yarder, present.
Marco Garcia. And we have a visitor.
Athena Garcia.
Which is who should be listed as a visitor. Yeah. Member of the public. She's a voting member of the public.
Okay. Well, let's move on to item 2, approval of the minutes. I think they got lost in the wash, so we're going to table those. And well, you know, we're talking about October 2021. Yeah. So I do know that when I did the yearly report for the finance subcommittee, I used a lot of notes from that October meeting. So
the LAR.
I know I've got them somewhere. So we'll table those and we'll move on to item 3, the fiscal year 2022 year in review, budget versus actuals. And is that going to be you, Carlos?
Yeah, that will be me. Okay. Unfortunately for you guys. So let me just kind of paraphrase that with a caveat. So we're still working through the budget as a whole. And one of the things that we're essentially experiencing this year, it's really we're migrating from our enterprise essentially system to a new system, which is called Workday. And so we're migrating all the data, all the information, all those budgets from the historical information to the new system. And essentially we're working simultaneously in the old system in terms of trying to stand up the budget and also do it in the new system. So there's been a lot of crossover data. There's misinformation out there. So and so what Victoria did is really just kind of assembled essentially the summary of the budget, the work she's seen today. There's obviously a lot of discrepancies, and it's not really what you're typically are used to seeing in terms of the overall budgets. And that's essentially what you got in front of you, was provided to you in terms of really the 15-page document that it basically is, I believe is called item 3 and 4, because it not only shows, which is a bit, again, is labeled up on top, Environmental General Services fiscal year 2022-23 financial report as of 7/5/22. So hopefully you got that. It's pretty small. You can blow it up and take a look at it even better. But essentially, it just, what we try to do is, as you have traditionally seen, is you've seen a line by line item of the budget, which basically shows a historical where we ended up and where essentially what has been adopted, what was adopted in 22 or the previous year, what was the actual expenditure, and then what is essentially is being proposed. So I'm hoping that maybe we can combine items 2, 3, and 4 for the same review under the same spreadsheet. Okay. So so if you don't mind, maybe I could and
we're 3, 4.
It's 3, 4, and 5.
It would be just 3 and 4. I think 5, okay, which is the fund balance review, I think we can cover that separately. We can also review the capital improvements project separately. So it's really just combining under this sheet items 3 and 4. I'm sorry. 4.
Okay.
Okay.
That makes sense.
So, Carlos, what did you say the enterprise was going to be called?
Oh, yeah. What's the new one called?
It's called Workday.
Workday?
Workday, yes.
Okay, never mind.
How is it different from what you were doing before?
I, from what I understand from the system, and Vicky helped me out with this, this is really more of a comprehensive system, okay? So it's going to incorporate finance, it's going to incorporate HR, it's going to incorporate employee evaluations, it's going to incorporate procurement, it's going to include project planning, it's going to include, I think those are the main components. So it's more of an integrated system than what we had before. We know how that goes. When we try to do a very comprehensive system that at the end of the day, it's not really going to do all the things that we wanted for it to do, but yet we're thinking this panacea for all the things that we want to solve. So
is everybody else using it, or is it just
you? No, it's everybody else. Citywide is going to be. Yeah, citywide. So from a business perspective, HR perspective, procurement perspective, project management perspective, there's a lot of things essentially that we need to evolve to or get ourselves adapted to it, to this new system.
Are we going to lose the enterprise fund approach?
No, it's still going to be kept the same. It is the same. Yeah, it's the same configuration.
Water doing it also?
Water's doing it also, yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it has created, and I'm glad you asked, Ms. Margo, I'm glad you asked, you made that comment, because one of the things, this is a kind of a very general fund-centric type of model. They're bundling in some of the line items under a few items, and that's really a challenge from an enterprise perspective, that we would like to see the granularity or the dissection of the cost much more in detail as compared to what the general fund sees that. So those are the challenges that we're experiencing as we speak, not only internally, but also Tucson Water has made some remarks on that because of really the bundling of accounts and not really having as much detail as we need to have from a cost service perspective. So for example, would be when we look at container, the cost of containers, they're saying, well, they go into, we purchase them out of container maintenance budget. Well, they're actually are part of the residential service. Let's bring it and put them over on the residential service. Well, it doesn't make sense. That's not how we have historically tracked it. It's better for us really to have those different costs, even though we purchase them out of one area, but we essentially, we expend them out of a different area. So it's going to create a little confusion going back to history and how they're trying to set it up, again, from a general fund perspective, and not really take into account the different breakdowns that we need from an enterprise perspective.
Yeah.
So,
you see, can you make it a little bigger? Because when I go to the pluses, it's on your screen, not on my screen. Yeah, that helps me a lot.
Okay, I can see that.
I was really struggling. Okay.
So Lucy, if you don't mind going back to page number one.
Okay. So the first one I read is vehicles. Is that right?
We're still on page number seven. So we're going to go to page.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Page one.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that essentially that they're doing or they've done is, they bundle a lot, and that's what we're trying to dissect, and Vicky's having a hard time with that, is they, as you see, okay, on the first line, 4601, ES administration, salaries and wages. Okay, so traditionally we allocated anywhere between 770,000 to essentially to 900,000. So now this budget, they're bringing in other activities, other salary accounts into this particular area, and we're trying to dissect what is now the 1.3 in salaries consist of. Who are you trying to bring on board, knowing that essentially that we haven't spent no more than basically $700,000 on that account. So we're trying to find out what is basically the difference between the $700,000 and the $1.4 million, the $1,371,000. So that is one of the challenges you're going to see. Wow. That we're just giving you the best information we can at this point in time. It's not accurate, is not correct. We're going through it, but I just want to make sure that
made
you aware of it, and just kind of went over it on the budget as a whole, making a distinction between what was added in 20, what was actual in 21, what we adopted in 22, what the actual numbers as of 7/5 are. We still haven't closed the budget year either, so it's probably take another month, 2 months before we can close it. And what essentially on the third column was essentially what's being adopted. But again, keep in mind, it's not that that's not what we essentially send out or what we see our budgets look like. It's really what's being produced out of the new system. And now we're trying to figure out the breakdown of those individual line items that to us don't make a whole lot of sense.
So who decided how to call? I'm sorry to keep interrupting you, Carlos. Who decided how to consolidate things? Were you asked, or did some mysterious person somewhere just do it?
We don't know. And it's probably the second, maybe some mysterious person that maybe that doesn't want to divulge her name probably came up with that. So no.
Some mysterious person.
And that's what Vicky has been spending a lot of time, at least the past 2 to 3 weeks at City Hall, trying to test the system, trying to go over and make sure that it's the data is migrating, make sure that things are being done correctly. So the city's been spending a lot of time and effort on doing that. We basically halted all other financial, HR, procurement operations. Really, they're all devoted on trying to get this one done.
My condolences, Victoria, Vicky.
Thank you. So this is just the whole new system.
And if I may, the whole thing is this whole new. So the 101s and the 4601 that you see on the screen, that all is translating into a completely different language of the chart of accounts. So that's where the migration as of now, the go live is supposed to be October 1st. So during that time, when October comes, this will theoretically make better sense. But until then, this is what we have. And you'll see the numbers reflected in the actuals each month. So the expenses will post to the correct categories. But yeah, it's just that this the 23 adopted, me trying to figure out what it should have been in our current financial system. And a lot of it is a one-to-one match, but the salaries and, as Carlos mentioned, the container budgets just kind of got merged with another expense category. And so I'm just trying to weed through that to make the best sense of it. But when the actuals post, we will be able to see them where they correctly expensed. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, as long as we don't lose any money.
Oh, no, I'm right. Keeping an eye on that. Don't worry.
Well, we lose her time, though. That could be done for more creative things.
So overall,
okay, Carlos, where are we now?
Keep going. I'm sorry.
No problem. So overall, just when you look at, and you'll see that on the full report that we'll present back on Thursday as part of the meeting, is when you look at it in terms of what are the numbers that we're seeing. So overall revenue, we're looking at what we accounted for so far is about $57.8 million. That's what it came in into the bank. What we have in terms of expenditure that we can pinpoint to right now is about $45 million. So there's still a lot of things that haven't hit essentially the books. Some equipment purchases have not made. Some of essentially the central charges for administrative fees have not kicked in. So we believe we truly believe we're going to be in the black again this year. It's probably going to be in the million and a half range, somewhere in the ballpark figure, or be there. So we feel okay about it. Not good, not perfect. We feel okay about it that at least we made it. We collected enough revenue, really pay essentially our expenditures, our current expenditures. So I can certainly go line by line item on some of those things. I was not able to identify, and maybe we can have a follow up meeting with that. I can certainly go over it. I did not really identify major things that really caught my attention or the worthwhile essentially mentioning. I'll mention a few, but we can certainly go line by line. But there's really not a whole lot of stuff that I was able to see. So let me just maybe if we turn to page three. Let's see, which would be kind of in the middle of the page, 4613, object line item 219. So you'll see in recycling, okay, miscellaneous. So we had traditionally, again, that line of 219, miscellaneous professional services, we had essentially budgeted about $3.5 million in 20, in 21, actual was 2.1. We kept the same amount of dollars for 22. We still kept it just to be safe in 23, but our expenditures pretty much up to, in terms of hard dollars paying the MRF, they're around $500,000. So I think we're not to where we've been a few years ago. I think there's a couple of things that, and you guys are aware of. One, the value of the commodities have increased. Essentially, the removal of the glass has helped us out a little bit, not only in terms of the tonnage, but also increasing the average commodity value. So it has provided some positive results in that area. So that's where you see a drastic change from the $2.1 million we spent in 21 and actuals in 22. And the actuals we project were going to be $500,600 in 22 as compared to what we have allocated in the past or what we've been 2 to 3 years ago on the amount of recyclings that we used to spend on the processing. So I think we're moving in the right direction. We still got some room for improvement on that from a contamination perspective, from a really renewing and adding some language to the agreement that is clearly identifies their responsibilities, our responsibilities. We're going to track some of those numbers and how we're going to calculate some of those fees moving forward. The next one would be just kind of down the page. 4633 line item 101. So one of the things that it probably doesn't show it there, you probably went a little bit too far, Lucy. Just go up a little bit more right there. So it's basically, if you move your cursor a little bit down to 4633 down, which says wages and salaries, bottom of the page, down, down, down. A little bit more right there. So a couple things to point out. As you are aware, there was a market adjustments to the EIO classification at the beginning of the year, back in May, to the tune of about 3.6%. That has been adjusted recently. There was just an adjustment that was actually made, another market adjustment, which they received an additional 5.4%. There was essentially a back pay check that was issued to them about two or three pay periods ago. That equated to about $800,000, close to $900,000 as a one-time payment that reflected on the payroll. So as we move forward, that additional cost is going to be reflected moving forward. So again, with the challenges, we cannot identify at this point in time what the breakdown is, the transition. We're going to be monitoring that just to make sure that we have the right line item for that purpose. So if you look at what is the difference, what is the delta that we're projecting, is about close to $750,000, about $100,000 overall being impacted in the 100 series for the additional rate adjustments. One of the things that we're being asked, we're going to be looking at that is, as folks, as we're doing hiring events, in order for us to fill some of those vacant positions, we can no longer bring them in at the starting rate of the classification, which is around 1674. So what we're doing is we have been given the flexibility to hire folks using a matrix approach. So that matrix approach is you have a starting salary, you have a minimum and a max, and over that span of time, you have roughly anywhere 20 to 25 years of experience, and it shows the mid range, the minimum, the midpoint, and the max range. So when employees come in and we offer them the traditional entry level essentially pay, and which is $1,879 or just about, we offer that and said, "Mom, it's too little for me. I want more. Here's my years of experience." So we do a resume check, and then we score them against essentially the matrix, and that is able really to give us the ability really to hire them based on experience, but using essentially that matrix.
I don't know.
So what has caused is certainly it has helped us essentially fill some of those vacant positions. So as of today, our books show one essentially vacant positions in the ESEO classification of all the vacant positions that we have at ESEOs or that are assigned to us that have traditionally been vacant for last year. We had about 14 vacancies.
I don't know if it's for me, but you're very garbled. I don't know if it's you or me.
Okay.
Kristen, are you okay, Chris?
Oh, I'm okay, but you're a little garbled, though. So it might be your...
I'm garbled, too.
Well, yeah.
Carlos?
You're okay now.
Okay, Carlos, because you said 1879 was the starting pay for new people?
Yes, that's... Yes, I believe that's yes.
Because I'll just tell you, they're advertising $19 an hour to work at McDonald's. Up here,
that is
trucky.
Yes,
much and, less skill level.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway,
so what that has created, so with the ability to bring folks higher than the starting pay, it has created some compression with folks that in here for a while. So yeah. One of the things we're going to be doing is we're going to be making another adjustment to evaluate the years of experience, put them up against essentially that matrix and possibly making some adjustments there. So that's going to also increase our cost as well moving forward. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's on the words. But one of the things that essentially the union is saying is, instead of you really making that adjustment, can we look at reclassifying the position to a higher grade? So that's on the works. It's still pending. But no matter which way we go about it, it's going to create a fiscal impact moving forward.
Yeah. Any guess as to the size?
I would say about 100,000, yeah. Somewhere, including everybody. I don't think it's going to be that significant. And the reason I say that is there was a market adjustment that was done. The recent market adjustment, there was a decompression analysis that was done a couple years ago that really took into account the years of service. So it really shouldn't be that much.
Okay. All right. Okay. Do you have a preference between just years of service or levels? I guess. Go ahead.
So to me, if I was them, I would, and this is what I suggested to them is, why don't we go through the analysis of looking at years of service, and that way you get that done right now and you get dollars going to your account right now. Mm-hmm. And then in the future, let's look at the reclassification, because there's no guarantee that reclassification will take place. Okay. But in their minds, they believe that they have, I would say, merits that would warrant a reclassification. I don't think that is the case, but obviously I see things a little bit different.
Isn't it also true that you have more control over putting in for years of service, and that the other goes to reclassification goes through a whole civil service process?
It does, yes. Uh-huh.
It can take correct. A long time, as you're pointing out.
It's going to take a long time, right. And that's what I suggest to them is, if we have the matrix, let's grade everybody on the matrix. Let's make those adjustments now. You stay within essentially the same job classification. You're good. And then even the other opportunity that's out there for them is so that's one opportunity. The other opportunity to be able to say is, why don't we create some sort of a skill-based breakdown within the operators to be able to say and split essentially that the minimum and the max into ESEO 1, ESEO 2, and ESEO 3. So what does that mean? So if I'm ESEO 1, I only operate one type of equipment. An ESEO 2, I operate one piece of equipment plus another one. That's the two. If I'm an ESEO, I'm a basically operate one basic piece of equipment plus two more. Mm-hmm. And by doing that, you can actually, your pay would essentially can be adjusted in almost essentially, if I'm a three, you can be essentially between the 75th percentile of the pay and the maximum pay. Okay. So that's another opportunity. But again, they're looking at it more of a reclassification because it's a different grade. But those are the tools that we have on the tool chest right now that we can deploy. We can get him going, and we can essentially get him moving sooner rather than later. So we're working with them to see which way we go about that.
And that's the union.
Yes. The other major glitch would be, or just to point out, is again in 4633. Object code 346, I believe it's 346. It shows computers as we're buying $1.3 million worth of computers, and we're not. So let me see if that's, 4633, line item 346. Well, at least the one that I saw, that's what it showed. I don't know why I have a different one. It's on the next page. Sorry, Lucy. Yeah, it's on the 4633. Down at the bottom, it shows 4633 residential collections essentially buying $1.3 million worth of computers, which we are not.
Okay.
The other one that
it's worth. Scenes equipment. Okay. This is still all residential service, huh?
Right. Mm-hmm. Residential collections. The other one that is worth noting is 4633 line item 61, which is just below that, is the vehicle replacement program. So you all know that have been buying trucks to the tune of 320, 350. Now they're around 420. So that is the additional cost that we're seeing. We just issued a purchase order for a brand new electrical truck using the Scorpion body.
Oh.
And that truck is going to be $726,000. And so just you look at that difference in terms of cost. That's a 72% increase. So our thought is, or Pat's thought on that is, let's test it. Let's give it a try. Let's see what the performance. And hopefully, even though it may be a high capital cost, but maybe the O&M costs are a little bit less. We got to try them out. We got to make sure that we put them in place because that's essentially the direction we've been given. And so we need to make sure that we move forward with that.
So, Carlos, I know what in one of our subcommittee meeting, Pat mentioned that the batteries last for 10 years, but the bodies fall apart after what, a few years?
On the bodies
on the electrical truck.
So a body probably will last us 6-7 years, and maybe pushing up to 10 years if we somehow refurbish that, essentially that body. But the batteries are saying last 30 years. Okay.
Oh, 30.
So it's 30, right. So it's really, what are we going to do? Can we swap batteries? Can we order trucks without a battery? And then we take the old ones, put them in the new ones. So those are the things that we gotta learn, and we gotta figure out how do we move forward with that.
Okay.
That's really strange.
I know.
The other one would be on the following page, which would be the brush and bulky program. I don't know if Pat mentioned to you in the subcommittee, but as of August 1st, the department is going to take over all of the homelessness cleanup efforts. That is going to include washes, is going to include everything. So we're going to be solely responsible for that overall. And so with that, we have made the ask that we want to stand up additional brush and bulky crews to be able to do that. And our goal is we want to be more proactive on addressing some of those things, working with police, working with fire, working with the city manager's office that's really taking care of the homelessness situation, as well as housing and community development for resources. we want to be more proactive, but I think our role is going to be limited really to the cleanups and whatever involvement we need to have from a code enforcement perspective in terms of having access. Our priority is not going to be, we need to clean up this camp versus that camp. That is, has to be determined somewhere else. All of our role is going to be just tell us what areas we need to clean up. We're going to be responsible for that. And you tell us in what order you're recommending that we move forward with that.
Okay. Yeah. He did talk about that, and I'm glad that it's seemingly like it's getting more clarified as to what it actually meant, because it seemed a little ambiguous. So this committee, this interdisciplinary, this interdepartmental committee at the city manager's level, I understand, is the one that will be making those decisions?
Yes, that's correct. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Now, for cleanup, is it going to be like what they did with COVID, where they let the homeless come back after they clean up, or do we not know?
So that's what the recommended CDC guidelines are. I don't think that has shifted or changed. The only thing that we probably, and again, it's not that we're going against policy or nor that's the intent, but we're seeing a lot of areas that are constantly being impacted. Mm-hmm. And so our goal is, how do we monitor those areas? How do we respond much, much quicker to those areas? And how do we, I would say, create an uncomfortable environment by cleaning up those areas that kind of disturb a little bit of that activity? So that's kind of the thought or the approach or in doing that. Because I think it's really, it's very specific. Residents are being affected. Some businesses are being heavily affected. And really, that's where we're going to try it and see if it makes any sense, or maybe the problem just gets worse. But I think that's essentially the intent is really, well, how can we provide those services to those affected folks?
Yeah. Two things. Cleaning up the washes, is that going to require any new or different equipment? Because, many of those washes are natural on the side and sandy bottoms. So that's something I fought for a long time ago, and I feel adamant about, so you don't want to come in and just, cut everything down and put cement on the bottoms again. So what are you thinking about the washes?
So there's two things on that. Okay. So one is the difference between wash maintenance, and that is really grading, cutting the vegetation and ensuring that the flow lines are maintained. That's not what we're going to do. What our role is going to be is, let's go out there. Let's remove the trash and debris that is associated with those camps. And let's really keep a closer look at that we're going to have to buy some additional equipment. And do we have to equip ourselves differently to be able to do that? Yes. And we're looking into that just to make sure that we don't put our folks at risk, and that we provide them the tools that they need to get into those specific areas, because they're going to have to go into some culverts that may be tight. We're going to have to identify areas that we're probably not going to be able to reach, but we'll do our best really to do the cleanup the best possible way we can. But in terms of really doing it by hand, what I'm asking them is really let's equip ourselves. Let's buy some automatic or motorized wheelbarrows, motorized little bobcats, whatever it is, so that we're not dragging trash bags from the bottom. Let's be more, I would say, more sophisticated than just hauling things by hand. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be not a very good, I would say, situation for our folks, and we certainly would like to alleviate as much of that contact as we can, as possible as we can.
And I would also make a plea that they get trained in how to deal with the riparian vegetation, that it's not an annoyance, but it's actually a critical part of the ecosystem and helping keeping the recharge water clean. because as the water filters through that riparian vegetation, the root structures and so forth, it's being cleansed of nitrogen and phosphorus. So it's really important that that riparian vegetation stay. And it's going to make it very unpleasant. I mean, I just look at some of the washes as I drive over them, and I'm glad I'm not having to walk through them and pull out, you know, the trash. So there's going to be a real pressure to want to just trim those things. Mm-hmm. So somehow there needs to be some sensitivity. I don't know if it's the urban forester person that can do that, or though I must say the press on what was going on about a week or two ago wasn't too good, or is, you know, consulting with some other group, watershed management group, or some others who really concerned about how those washes or streams, as they call them, are being dealt with. the other thing I was going to say, that's sort of end of that soapbox. The other one I was thinking about was, if you keep going in and cleaning something up and the people come back and then you clean it up and they come back, it seems to me the pressure is going to mount on following up with Steve Kozacik's idea of some permanent encampments. Because if I were you, I would then start arguing, well, let's have some trash barrels, let's have some containers, let's have some porta potties brought in, because, you know, how many times do we have to clean up before we recognize this is a place people are going to keep coming back to?
Sure.
So I don't know what kind of part of that.
Yeah, that's a whole nother, that's a whole nother story.
No, but I think you need to keep
going. Yeah, I know.
Going on.
Yeah, yeah.
And I could just
see pictures of Carlos picking up trash in one of the washes. So thank you, Carlos.
He knows what it's like. Yeah. But I just, coming down the road, I see that pressure for some permanent encampments.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's going to be so inefficient for you to go in, clean up encampment A, grade everything, rake everything, take everything away, including all the poop. And then a week later, you're back doing it again. I mean, people are going to get tired of it.
Mm-hmm.
So the employees are going to get tired of it.
Yeah, they are. Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Anyway.
That's bigger than what we're talking about, for sure.
I know, but if ES is in charge of cleanup, they're going to have a very major push in how these camps develop.
Yeah. So. All right. Let's see. Where are you now, Carlos?
So the other thing is, along those lines, is we did get additional positions assigned to us or given to us not to augment the brush and bulky crews, so that we don't get too far behind. That's one thing it's also going to give us the capacity really to be, again, not only addressing homeless camps, but also really give us capacity really to start the brush and bulky plus again, so that we can begin to look at things more proactively, addressing some of those neighborhood needs. So we'll get geared up for that. We did have a hiring event a couple of weeks ago, where we hired 9 ESEOs and 12 environmental service workers. So it was a very successful event. And so we're going through the motions of really the clearances, the licenses, and all this stuff. And so hopefully they'll be on board in the next 2 to 3 weeks, getting that help and feeling that that help. Hopefully we'll get that going sooner rather than later.
Great news. Wonderful.
Yes. Well, because you can't depend on DOC crews now.
Well, and that's the thing is, even if we did, I think that the council is not really on board with us continuing to use them as a labor pool. So we're going to be more equipping ourselves with internal resources that could be a little bit more reliable as well.
That's good news.
Okay.
I think there's going to be a lot of emphasis this year on really trying to find a second home for our Tanner Maidens. You know, we have been looking at that for the past couple of years. There is some interest of really utilizing the 10th Avenue transfer station for a low-income subsidized housing city complex to be located in that facility. So we're going to be looking very close, working very hard, really, to get that moving sooner rather than later. So we'll essentially get that moving.
Hadn't we done a lot of work on that facility cleaning?
We did about 6 years ago. We demoed the old transfer station. We cleared it out. We essentially started working on the initial designs for restanding that building at that location. And so we did not move forward with that. We were going to move it to Los Reales. But now it probably makes a little bit more sense, really, just to make the improvements here, so we can better benefit from that resource being here, in the ground.
Here at being Topsy. At Thomas. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So do container maintenance at Tommy Price.
At Tommy Price. Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
If we go at the bottom, I think, I don't know, it's unit 4614. So recycling grant, you may or may not be aware, but the city was awarded $1 million for what is called a revolving fund, a brownfields revolving fund. So we have always, we have been very lucky to receive the brownfield assessment grants. So that's when we provide assistance to local businesses, local property owners, really to do assessments of the property, identify if there's any environmental issues with them, and help them with a phase one or phase two assess. This year, we still have a little bit of money on that to continue with those efforts. But this year we got selected for the $1 million. So what does that mean is that the city, through a third party, will act as a lender, where we would essentially, if somebody comes in and identifies a need really to do some environmental mitigation on the property, so either lead abatement, asbestos abatement, underground leak storage tanks, whatever the situation is from an environmental perspective, and they're trying to redevelop their site, we can basically provide them that essentially that loan at a very reasonable rate, without really going through all the financial motions, get that taken care of, so that way they can go through a normal financial institution really to get the loan for whatever they got to do. So it's something that the city has been applying. I know when I started here, we started looking at it. We submitted the grant for 2 to 3 years. We were not successful. So this year we were successful in obtaining that grant. It's about $1 million. So the idea is, again, we loan money, we get some of the money paid back, we're applying to that money, and we continue to loan that money for people that that need that assistance for environmental mitigation. So so we're going to be getting into that program as well.
Is it new buildings, existing buildings? Is it also nonprofits? Who's going to be eligible?
So it's primarily got to be the brownfields classification. So I don't think it really has to do with new buildings. It's probably more on buildings that are being renovated, rehabilitated, and redeveloped. And it's a function. It could be nonprofits, could be private citizens, could be companies. There's as long as they meet essentially that that brownfields criteria, they should be eligible for that.
Okay, NGOs, private citizens, and developer. Well, those would be developers. Okay, so it could be for renovations, and it could be primarily just for the asbestos.
Mm-hmm. That's the primary intent for that. Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
The other thing that we've seen that on the following page in unit 4654, which is line item 219. So as you are aware, we have seen some hits at Los Reales in the north part of the landfill. So we may see some need for us to make additional investment in that area. for additional wells, additional extraction wells. So even though that's part of the landfill, we can certainly probably use that as part of the O&M budget really to cover that.
Explain that better. I'm sorry, I'm a little bit lost. You say hits on the landfill.
Okay, so we have seen some exceedances, methane exceedances.
Methane, okay.
On the northern on the northern cells by cell, between cell 3 and cell 4A. And so those hits have been in exceedance of 20, 30, 40%, and the Lowell Expresso limit is 5%. So we have done some monitoring wells. We just installed an extraction well, and we may just need to continue to doing more extraction wells really to make sure that we can mitigate that those exceedances. So one, we can certainly pull them out of Los Reales budget, but I think it makes more sense really to fund them out of the O&M budget to fund those improvements. So we'll see some additional expenditures to that. All of that has been pretty much assessment, investigation, one well, but we may have to pick that up a little bit more because we're not really seeing the results that we wanted to see out of there. And we got to figure out what's really causing that.
And what are you doing with the extra gas you're pulling out?
It's going through, still going to the flare. It's being flared.
Just flared. Mm-hmm. No movement on what using it?
No, ma'am. So essentially, we did the preparation of the RFP packet. It was forwarded to procurement. They're doing a two-step process selection. And so hopefully they promised me that they will try to get something out in the next week to 10 days to get us a packet for us to review and put it out on the street.
Okay.
One of the things that we hadn't seen looking at line item 4691, line items 218, 219, which is kind of half of the page. Those are expenditures related to the Silverbell pump and treat system. That's roughly about $180,000 that we're spending on O&M cost over there. That's something that we didn't have before. And maybe that's an opportunity for us to take into consideration as we move forward with rate design to make those adjustments to make sure that we can recover those costs moving forward. Okay, so that's item 4654. Line item 426 or 218 and 219, 4691, I'm sorry, 4691, line items 218 and 219.
Isn't there anybody else that should be helping with that Silver Bell cleanup? What's happened to Kinder Morgan? Have they?
So that's still pending, it's still ongoing. We haven't got to that point yet.
So we're still claiming that it's our responsibility for all the cleanup because it was a landfill.
Yes. Uh-huh. Yes. Okay. Yes.
So we need to keep reminding people of that when we talk about the importance of that closure fund, because this really is an issue that, I mean, to my mind, that money should be coming out of the closure fund.
Yes and no. And the reason I say that is Silverbell does not fall into the criteria of setting aside landfill closure, post-closure dollars. Okay. So from that definition, it doesn't meet it. But we still have the liability. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm just trying to see a way, you know, we keep getting hit. Oh, you don't really need that much money, or, you know, and to remind them, well, here is a case where we're paying $180,000 or so a year out of operating, which is because of a how a landfill was closed, mm-hmm. or
that's correct.
How it was closed, just that mm-hmm. it was closed and it was our garbage that was in there. And these things all over town, you know, it's not just about. So it just seems to me we need to keep that argument in the front of our heads.
I agree. And then the rest of the sheets, again, we can go over those, but we got a question. So how those numbers are being essentially put together. There's a duplication of efforts. They call it EGSD Financial. They call it EGSD Shared Services, EGSD mm-hmm. Procurement. So that's just basically what Vicky pulled out of the system. It's be hard to really to follow it, explain it. I don't know what to say. That it's still work in progress.
Yeah, I see all these things down at the bottom. Of course, this is specifically Los Reales, I guess, the 4653. There are all these things down here for medical, dental, life insurance, long-term disability, employee assistance programs, is that death benefits. So there are all those kinds of things probably are mimicked in the residential, in the commercial, because they're just, I'm just noticing them right here.
Yes. some of them are populated, some of them are not. Okay. Not. In the case of Los Reales, it's populated, but in some of the other residential or commercial or continuum maintenance, it doesn't show it that way.
Okay.
So yeah, that's a it should look like that.
It should look like that for every mm-hmm. one of those.
For everyone. Mm-hmm.
I guess that's a way to tell how much your employees are really costing, because salaries is only a small part of the cost.
It's typically whatever the overall salary, yearly salary, you multiply that out. The factor that we use today is 62%. So for every dollar spent on labor cost, you have to add 62% for additional benefits and cost.
Wow. Okay. Wow. That's a big number. When you say in costs, excuse me, is that hiring costs or is that equipment costs that you need to bribe at them with uniforms or what's that added?
So it's the medical insurance, the pension cost.
Yeah.
It also includes some overtime cost. It includes some extra time. Long-term life disability. So there's a lot of other costs that essentially the medical, dental, insurance, workers' compensation insurance, FICA. A little bit of uniforms, but it's not that significant. Most of that, I would say a good chunk of that is really related to pensions and the FICA tax.
Okay.
And overtime.
Yeah. Okay.
So I didn't mean to be evasive. I just kind of want to give you.
I moving from one system to another, I think you have to take a deep breath and dive in and then hold your breath as long as you can, because I'm sorry, I've seen these things take years. Vicky, I'm sorry. I've seen these migrations take a long time. And so I'm sorry to hear that this is happening, but I hope it's for the better.
Let's hope so.
Okay. It should be. Once we get past all the kinks, it will be. It's a much more user-friendly system.
Okay. So.
You've been recorded, Vicky, okay? So we'll see how you're doing today. No, I'm just kidding. So hopefully that covers items 3 and 4. And we'll be happy to really, as we meet down the road, probably we can get you much better information. Than what we just provided today.
Okay.
Well, that was a lot, though. Thank you. So we're going to move on to item 5.
Sure. Mm-hmm. So, Lucy, would you mind bringing that up, please?
Okay.
You can scroll up or scroll down. Okay, right
there. That's good. I can read that just fine.
So as of June of last year, okay, at the end of the fiscal year, we showed that we have on the bank, and that's what we call the ES fund balance of $52 million, $52,512. That's what our savings account looks like. Okay. So then when, just like in a savings account, we have a budget and we have how we want to use and how we project we're going to use that essentially those dollars. So we essentially, the way we're calling designating a landfill closure and post closure, we're saying out of that money, we're designating $13.9 million for that purpose. Because of the groundwater protection fee, it's a restricted fund. We also have to take that out. Okay, we can't, we can use it for to administer, design, construct, operate, and maintain a groundwater remediation or a landfill gas system. Those are the primary things. So we can't buy trucks. We can't essentially build a CNG plant. We can't build an office. We cannot make improvements to container maintenance out of the groundwater protection fee. It's only intended for that.
But we can pay for Silver Bell out of it.
We can pay Silver Bell out of it. Yes. Uh-huh. So we can pay for the capital cost, just like we did a few years ago, and we can pay for the O&M cost. Yes. And we can certainly help us offset the operating cost to monitor all the landfills, all the groundwater monitoring, all that we can pay. We can use that money for that purpose. Roughly, we generate about $3.8 million in the groundwater protection fee per year. Okay. And the fee is, it's $1.13 for customers inside the city. And then we also allocate 7 cents per account per month to administer the city stormwater program. And that's only just to meet the stormwater permit requirements. So we essentially take away about $1.06 per residential account. And overall, because it includes commercial customers, includes everybody, that's what we essentially are able to collect $3.8 million overall per year. Okay. So that's so we got $52 million. We got 13.8 that is dedicated for the landfill closure and post closure. And I'll go into more details on that one. Then we also say we want to carve some money for our capital projects. And what we got in the books is be able to say we're designating roughly $17.5 million for that purpose, because we want to do pay-as-we-go basis. So if we look at $17 million, sounds very good, but if we're going to be doing cell number 4B, that project is probably going to cost us anywhere between $6 to $7 million. That's probably going to leave us with essentially $10 million left over. Okay, it's not a whole lot if we know that if we want to continue on a cash basis, if we want to do improvements to containers, we want to do other things, we're going to be strapped on cash if we want to continue on a pay-as-we-go basis. Okay. Some of the projects that we may have on the books may not, we're probably not going to be doing them on a cash basis, because I think those are going to cost us a lot of money. So one of them would be is the landfill gas project. That project is probably going to cost us about $20 to $23 million. Okay. And so that project, we have to finance that over time. Yeah. If the city, if we move forward, we identify that a mixed use processing facility makes sense at Los Reales, then that facility is going to cost us about $15 to $20 million. So probably we're going to have to issue COPS, or we're going to have to issue some sort of debt issuance really to absorb that. The debt payment of that has to be paid out by user fees. Okay. We also, part of that is we've been asked really to set aside money for fuel contingency based on our use. So we still use some diesel, not so much on CNG, but we still use a diesel in some of our commercial equipment. And we still use a lot of diesel at the landfill. So given the fuel prices, we said, let's put that money aside. So when we start off at $52.2 million, we start taking out those deductions, and essentially it gives us at the end of the day about $9.9 million of what is called available revenue, which we call it capital, or we can also call it an operating reserve. For the size of our budget, which is about $53 million, we should have on the bank as an operating reserve about $8.9, close to $9 million. So if you look at and checking that mark on having the 60-day reserve, we have it at this point in time.
Hooray for us. I remember when we started building that a long time ago. So we've done very well to do that. Good managing.
So going back to some of the thoughts, Ms. Margo, is and the comments you made earlier, is that we still we made some progress, but we still got some work to do, especially from the landfill closure and post closure.
Yep.
So when we look at when regulators see us, okay, or when we do what is called a GASB 18 report, they're saying, hey, city, there's four facilities that you need to be responsible and set money aside for landfill closure and post closure. Okay. If you accepted waste after 2001, I believe is, or no, 1995, 96, if you accepted waste after that time, you are responsible for to set aside closure and post closure requirements. So as of today, in that reporting year, which is fiscal year 20, the end of 22, is that we should have on the banks about $35.6 million for Los Reales. We should have about $2.5 million for Harrison. We should have about $2.1 for Irvington. And we should have about $2.2 for Vincent Mullins. So when you add up all those figures, it equates to about $42.4 million. So from auditing perspective, we're not being dinked because we say, oh, city, you got $52.5 million. You need to have on the banks 42.3. You're good to go. Okay. But in reality, we're not, because they don't really care if it's for capital projects, if it's for groundwater protection or fuel contingency. You're showing a reserve to this level, which is higher than what the GASB reporting document looks like. So you're good to go. But internally, said, no, we're not good to go. Okay. We still have a lot of money that we still have to set aside for landfill closure and post closure. So if we look at the difference in terms of the requirement, the $42.4 million minus what we need to have or what we have, okay? The overall requirement of $42.4 million minus the $13.8 million that we have today, it still gives us a requirement of almost $28.4 million. So it's a huge number. Say, well, how am I going to start paying for that, okay? So let's use a hypothetical figure. Let's say that Los Reales is still going to be open for at least 30 years. I want to be done with our requirements in 30 years. What is that number? That number equates to about $950,000. And that's what we have always used, that we should set aside at least $1 million a year for landfill closure and post closure. So just purely on that, okay, that equates to about having to raise fees to the tune of 55 cents per customer per month to be able to absorb that additional revenue requirement for landfill closure and post closure, okay, just by itself. Okay. So we still made some progress, still got some work to do. We haven't been dinged from the auditing perspective. Somebody looking at externally, somebody says you're solid. But if I take $52 million, I take what I need to have at the bank, $42 million, I'm down to $10 million. I know I got a groundwater protection fee. I'm restricted to the tune of $10 million. Then at that point in time, I don't have no money for capital projects, nor I have no money for contingency. Nor I'm basically at that point, I'm on the red for having an operating reserve. So So that's why we have to be more solvent. We have to prepare ourselves really for the future, and we have to be ready to absorb any future capital improvements, whether they're going to be financed or we're going to do it on a cash as we go basis. My recommendation would be as we move forward and we start developing additional cells, those cells should be paid out with cash and from our reserves, and let's not really go into a debt issuance on that. On the other side, and the same thing goes with capital outlay for buying bulldozers, buying excavators, whatever we need, landfill equipment, we should pay that on a pay-as-we-go basis. But if we're doing big facilities that essentially have a useful life more than 10 years, we should basically get those financed. But we got to recover the debt service through user fees, whether it's landfill or whether it's basically residential accounts. So that's kind of where we're at on the fund balance.
Okay, so you're saying, why is the city still thinking about doing the gasification plant themselves and not letting the gas company do it, Southwest Gas?
The reason for it is they're only seeing the revenue side of things, okay? They're only seeing what the potential loss of revenue would be. But what they're not seeing on the other side is the amount of money that is required to invest to be able to recover essentially that revenue.
And the day so is, not, you mean at the management level, they just say, wow, we'll sell this gas and we'll get all this money.
Right.
But they're not seeing instead what the cost is going to be to build the plant, to operate it, to et cetera, et cetera.
Right. And there's all the other risks associated with that as well. Yeah. So if the rents, so what makes those projects financially feasible is not that you're pulling gas and you're cleaning it and you inject it into the pipeline. That model costs a lot more than just buying gas from Southwest Gas today. We're not getting ahead of the game. So where it makes sense is really the environmental credits or attributes that once you clean it, you inject it into the pipeline, you now created essentially a rinse for that somebody basically buys from you. And if you all of a sudden transport that gas to California, you're not only getting the RINs market, but you're also getting the low carbon fuel credits out of California. But in the same token, we're forgetting that in order for us to get the gas to California, there are pipeline gates that essentially that we need to get past through that. And we got to pay that gatekeeper a fee to use their pipeline. Yeah, so at the end of the day, it sounds very good. But once you're done, it's not as profitable as people make it sound.
Mm. Yeah.
So then that's what it really becomes to be a policy decision to say, what is our core business? Our core business is really to provide residential trash collection to residents and really run an environmentally sound and compliant system out there. Beyond that, we really should not be in the open commodity market or even into the energy business, because we think that we should be collecting additional revenue. It's a very complicated model. We're not set up really to run that way. We are very, I would say, inflexible as it relates to reacting to the market conditions. And we don't have the authority, because we're government, to be able to react to some of those things right away.
Well, and I think, Carlos, even more telling is you don't have the flexibility to hire and pay people to run these things. I mean, the design, the carry through of building something. I mean, we've just seen what's happened with simple things like the glass crusher, and now the pressure by bifusion and all the other pressures, the sustainability campus that are being put on you. I mean, you're starting to be a little mini government by yourself, and you're one person. You know, you haven't hired six deputies and so forth, one to take on each project. So from my perspective, the biggest problem is that the city is simply not at a level or at a place that it can hire the people that need to do to build and to run it. Mm-hmm. And it's a big project. It's not a trivial project. Any of them are.
But. Right.
So, okay. Well, so there's still pressure on to build it ourselves, huh?
Well, I think that's still pending. I think it's I think there's a lot of different ideas. And I think, and probably what probably the council is coming from is I don't think we had a very good success when we did the first project. Okay. The landfill gas, when we were sending stuff to TEP, that's one. Two, probably the experience that we have had with our recycling agreement hasn't been that great either. And so I think they're leery on really entering into those long-term contracts. Mm-hmm. And that's why I think we want to do additional due diligence. But I think on that, I think it's part of that is we need to recognize that there's areas that we're not going to be able to be all for everybody. Yep. And we just got to stay focused on what is really our core service and really do our best to say, mm-hmm. we're doing the best we can to provide the service and we're doing the best we can on really maximizing some of those contracts. But in reality, we're not equipped to be able to run those types of systems. And it's the physical management of those systems. It's really that we're not equipped to work in a commodity market. And make those adjustments as the market fluctuates. We don't.
Right. And that's, again, what a private enterprise would do is that they can handle that. I mean, we were doing pretty well with the recycling in the early days when pretty much it was a straight through, you know, what are you getting? We're splitting 50-50. It's only when we started trying to give them a break in order to keep them going that, and we haven't gotten out from under that, that we're having all the problems now. But so, I mean, I think there could be I think it's not entirely to say that safe to say that what's happening at the MRF right now is a problem of a long-term agreement. It's more that what's happening right now is that we haven't been nimble enough to go back at them and say, okay, the situation we were helping you with is over. Now it's time to be something. And that's, again, an issue of having enough people to do those kinds of things. I mean, I really think you should have one person with the MRF and one person who manages, you know, gas and one person who manages glass crushing and one person. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's five high-level administrators you don't have. So I'm sorry. I really think you need more people, not because you aren't competent, but because it's inhumane to you to require you to do so much. You know. So anyway, sorry, off on my soapbox again.
So one of the things I failed to mention, that fund balance, okay, does not include, okay, the $7-8 million that essentially was allocated for the remediation of the Congress and the Irmont landfill. So that's on top of that.
Okay. Okay, good. We should have asked about from Newmont, etc. They still owe you the money.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Somebody does anyway. Okay. There's a kitchen issue here. Sorry.
I had to mute because my dog started barking.
cucumbers and the zucchini look alike, unless you're not using it.
So we're done with item six, right?
Item number five.
Five.
Item number five. Uh-huh.
Okay. So you want to? We'll probably need to make it go a little quicker.
I'll be quiet
so we can get out. Now, I didn't say that, Margo.
So right in front of you is just the list of capital projects that essentially we're contemplating for that are currently underway or are being planned for as a continuation for fiscal year 23. We continue to make progress on the bathroom and locker remodel. I think that's going well. We're essentially the landfill berm. We're going to continue with the landscaping buffer. That you'll see $1 million in there. Most of that is really the acquisition of the property in there. So those are the cost. The household hazardous waste relocation is taking place. Contract was mobilized essentially a couple of weeks ago, so we're working through that. We did bring aboard Swaim and Associates really to help us with the continued maintenance topsy relocation. We have allocated for this year about $1.5 million for that. We still left about $1.5 million for the landfill gas to energy project, because no matter what, we still need to make improvements to the collection system. So we left some money in there. One of the projects we just finalized, and this is really became to be a transition between fiscal year 22 and 23, is that third CNG compressor. That's all done, it's all complete. So we probably should be seeing the last invoices out of that. The landfill line cells, essentially 4B, we had to make some adjustments on the grading of that, because some of the limits that were shown originally require for us to put some fill material on already slopes that essentially that already have waste. And I said, we're not going to do that. We're not going to put new dirt on top of old garbage. So we're just going to make some adjustments to that and finalize that. The other thing that we're working through that is there is a pump and treat system in Los Reales, that there is a pond that essentially we use when we clean up the water. We bring it into that pond, then we pump it into our Klein tank that we use for dust control. So we need to eliminate that pond because of the cell is going to extend and it's going to reach the limits of that pond. So we're evaluating really what are the overall water needs out there, how we're going to meet those, how much of those can we meet with the pump and treat system, and how much of that can we meet out of the portable water system. So we're working through that. We did continue to allocate about $1 million for the Congress landfill excavation. And the thought on that was make sure that we can secure the site. We can probably provide some amenities. I just got some direction from city manager's office as well as from Ward 1. They really don't want us to make any improvements in there. They really are focusing on transferring the property to the Tohono O'odham Nation and going through that process. And if that's the case, they want to leave it as virgin as it could be, just the way it is right now. And so we're going to stand down on making those improvements. So that's better for us. And there's less money that we put out there that essentially that may take us longer really to recover. So that's good. So I think overall, that's the general description of the capital projects moving forward.
I think the water one is a very interesting project to look at the water needs overall and to to see, you know, how much from the pump and treat and how much from potable. And then there is the stormwater capture. I guess if it had a cement base and a cement lined, you could keep some of it from percolating out and reuse, but maybe it's not of a quality that you can do that with. But it seems to me stormwater should be added to that mix. Mm-hmm. And then you also have that arroyo that goes through. You can put in a little rubber dam and catch that mm-hmm. and reuse it.
So one of the things, one of the ideas that we had was, can we extend essentially the reclaimed water system from where it's at today, roughly Valencia and Alvernon, and bring it all the way to Los Reales kind of for the long term? So someone says, you know what, it's you'll never recover the investment. We can probably just set up a brand new system out there, a new well. It's not going to be tied into the portable system. It's going to be really your process water well, really just to meet our needs. So that we're not really connected to the portable water system. It's still going to be tapping into the groundwater, but it's not going to be treated to the level of a domestic water well. So we're going to be working through that.
Okay, good. Okay. Interesting.
Yeah, it is.
That's it.
Okay, so quickly, item 7, rate study. Is that, do you have, I don't know if we, is that a big one?
No, it isn't. So it's very, okay. Very quickly. We have been asked by the manager's office really to put together a brief summary in terms of what our potential rate adjustments may look like. As you know, we have engaged with NewGen, who's doing a not a full cost of service study, but really a revenue requirement model. They promised that they would get that information to us at the end of July. The idea or the intent is really for the manager to have a discussion with the council and obviously with you guys as it relates to what we think the revenue requirements are going to be or whatever rate adjustments we need to be at around the August timeframe. The goal is really to have the discussion this year in terms of having a macro view of what those adjustments may look like. The idea is he wants to brief the council. He doesn't want to really approach this as a one-off from essentially just environmental services or water by itself. So there's several fees that are being proposed to be modified, environmental services, water, parks, Park Tucson, and what was the other one? And planning development services. So the idea is he wants to tell the council, hey, council, this is where what we need to be at. There's reasons why. Let's prioritize that and really come up with a multi-year plan really to fund those improvements. What I basically suggested to him in terms of where we at is we probably need a $5 adjustment overall. And we know we talked about four years ago, essentially $1 a year for the next 3 years. So it's not any different. So maybe just divide up the $5 into 3 years and really make some adjustments to the commercial customers to the tune of 6% and maybe landfill fees to the tune of 10%. And so that's kind of where what my recommendation was, but obviously it's still pending the final results of the rate study. So that's in a nutshell. So as soon as we have some sort of a draft document, we'll bring it to finance subcommittee. We'll bring it to full ESAC as well. We'll have discussions with the council and really get in front of them to see what the potential of adjustments may look like moving forward, with the intent to make them effective or at least have them adopted so they can become effective January 1st of 2023.
So are you really thinking it's going to be August? I mean, what are you guessing that this will be that first meeting in August or second meeting in August?
I don't think it's going to be adopted by August. It's we're just really are going to be bringing those issues up in terms of what we're thinking. And then we'll get some sense from the council in terms of really going through the regulatory process to notify the public and do the
song and dance.
Yeah, the song and dance.
I'm just concerned about the ESAC that I think they would like to be in before it goes to council. But I don't know if it's going to work because the meeting...
And seeing it from the other perspective is the council would like to see it first because they say, well, how come you're telling the advisory committees first and not telling us first? So it's almost a chicken and the egg type of situation. Okay. So, but our goal is to do it in parallel so that we don't get ourselves too out of whack on the timing.
Okay. That sounds good.
Yeah, it is.
Okay. Take a deep breath now. I think we can move on to item 8, future agenda. Anything you want to add?
Well, I guess if we plan on meeting every couple of months, we should know more about what's happening with this migration system and what costs are doing. And I would hope we'd meet in a couple of months, we'd have that and we'd have the final close out of the year so we know exactly what's going over. So the close out and the migrant, and what is it called? Something Gov, Workday.
Workday.
God, what had been
called Workday.
Workday Progress.
Okay.
And we'll bring chocolates to Vicky to help her get through it.
Yeah, definitely. All right.
Let's see. I think those are.
That's plenty.
Well, and then obviously the rate study, whether we need to have more
feedback,
discussion about it. So the study that's being done right now, you said, was really just on revenue generation. In other words, laying out, you know, this and this happens. This is what we need over the next 5 years in additional revenue. Like if we go to 2 or 3 more electric vehicles, we're going to need megabucks instead of, yeah, that kind of stuff. Okay. The other half of it, when we've done these rate studies before, which was looking at the different classes. So I always remember the story when we were looking at a really pretty fine breakdown of, you know, the individual customer, then like Tucson. I don't know. Do we have the school district still, or did we lose that account?
We lost that account. Yeah.
We lost that account. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if we want to compete and try to get any of those back, or we're just happy somebody else is taking care of them. Anyway, we could see that very small changes in who was paying, you know, 5 cents, 10 cents could make up a big amount for a whole nother group. So I do think we need to look at it fairly fine tooth comb. I suppose, especially the landfill, when you say raising the landfill rates, I remember, I think last time when you went after Republic, I think it was Cunningham who had the big discussion. I was going to say hissy fit over how that was structured. Are you looking at that part of the landfill? Because we collected an awful lot from the small people coming in.
So it's all of them. So all the customer classes.
Mm-hmm. It's across all classes.
Yeah, it's across. So it's not only the put and pay agreements, our regular commercial accounts, your RADs, your Republics, your general contractors, got to be part of that. It's all the customers going into the landfill. Self haulers, so essentially, like self haulers, if we look at a 10% increase, or right now they're paying $15, they would essentially be going to $16 or $16.50.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It's just, yeah. Except we just jacked it up to 15 because it was 10. Mm-hmm. All right. Well.
So those are for the future agenda.
Yeah. Sounds like we should meet again in about 2 months. Vicky, will you be ready for us in 2 months with the closeout by then?
I should be, yes. For 22, yes.
Yeah, so July, August. So that would be sometime in September.
September, okay.
And we may meet earlier as we get a draft report prepared. We'll probably just sit down and go over it and maybe schedule a quick conference call with the consultant, and that will, before we get it too far into finalize and present it to the city manager's office or the mayor and council. So you'll see that. So we'll essentially get that movement. But again, it's a chicken and the egg too. Sometimes it's really just got to be sensitive to that, at least from my end.
Right. Oh, yeah. I understand that. I just think that having us ask you some questions ahead of time might prepare you for some of the other questions that will come. That's only my thinking of why having us early, and we can even be sworn to secrecy. We don't have to lab things like that.
Sounds good.
My lips are sealed. Sure.
Okay. $20 increase in your garbage bill.
So what? It's look, it's 5:31. Are you guys ready to adjourn?
It's time for the cocktail hour.
It's time. Well, it's dinner time. So anyways. Thirsty. Yes. Time to adjourn. Hey, have a good rest of the night, everyone.
Yeah, everyone. See you on Thursday.
Take care. Bye. See you Thursday. Bye-bye.
Bye. 5:31. Bye-bye. Yeah, I'll see you.
Okay.